Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on lying deceivers when we come back. You know, in 1970, the world food supply was about 73 days for every man, woman, and child on the planet. But today, it's down to less than 38 days. Now, we Americans produce grain for export, and then we turn around and our grapes are imported from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support this global 2,000 population reduction program. Now, globalization may be good for business, but globalization is bad for you and it's bad for me. Now, back in 1940, we all had a pantry full of food to feed our families for a year or more. But today, we have a 3-day supply in our refrigerators, and we believe in our supermarket system of just-in-time delivery to feed us all. But over the past 60 years or so, we have traded that one-year food supply for 3 days. Now, these global 2,000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, as I call them, plan to use famine, plague, disease, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. Or so says the Club of Rome. That's their agenda. Now, these evil madmen with their global 2,000 genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for, and I say let them die for their cause. But let's you and I live for ours. So let me show you from the scripture how to be a live survivor instead of a dead victim. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. Doesn't cost you anything. That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Now, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. georgegordon.org. Then go to the archives page and download her. And last time we were talking about peak oil, and I said, hey, let me take up this oil thing over here, and I'll blow your socks off with some numbers. Now, last time I showed you that the concept of peak oil is a piece of propaganda. It's marketing strategy. It's marketing propaganda by the oil industry. I mean, if they came out and told us the world has about a 600-year supply of oil, well, then what in the hell are we going to be selling oil for $10, $12 a gallon for? I mean, think of this. Over in England right now, last time I saw a number, the price of unleaded regular gasoline was $9.65 a gallon. They're the low end. Over on the continent in France, and Holland's got the highest priced gas. It was 11-something, priced in American dollars. You know, they price it over there in euros, and they sell it by the liter, but the Germans and the French and the Dutch, they're paying $10, $11 a gallon for gas. Now, can you see why they drive those little cars? I mean, they're not driving SUVs over there. We Americans over here are paying about $3 a gallon for gas. Now, that's for you Europeans. $3 a gallon. and we're nothing but a nation of spoiled crybabies. Just bitching and moaning about the price of gas, and oh my God. Now, the truth of the matter is, the price of gas at $3 a gallon here in the United States is about the same price that it was in 1950, 1955, or 1960. You know, we're still making, you know, the same amount of gas. Now, it is true, we're importing a lot of it, and we got this god-awful balance of payments deficit. And that's a problem, needs to be solved, I don't deny it. But the price of gas in this country is dirt cheap. Dirt cheap. And to complain about $3 a gallon gas, you know, is to beg the question. Now, the cheapest gas in the world is in Venezuela, where it's 9 cents a gallon. Last time I saw a number, 9 cents. The government subsidizes gasoline for the peasants. And in some other countries that have gasoline, you know, they charge a buck and a half or 80 cents or something like that. But, you know, for Americans paying $3 a gallon, that's pretty reasonable. Now, we're told constantly, well, we peaked our oil out and we've only got 5% of the world's oil. And, oh, my God, we just, I don't know what we're going to do. We got to go green. We got to have hydrogen-powered gas cars. And electric cars, now they're telling us. I'm not opposed to hydrogen fuel. I'm not opposed to electric cars. We used to have electric cars in this country and steam-powered cars. And you know, I'm not knocking it one way or the other. But the idea that we're running out of oil is a damn lie. And let me show you why. Out in the western United States, we got a bunch of oil out there. It's called oil shale. Back in the 70s, when they had the Arab oil embargo, they did it to us twice. And they got to talking about, you know, oil and one thing and another. Well, in the National Geographic 1981, they gave us some numbers. Now, how much oil do you think we have here in the United States? Remember, you Canadians have 3 trillion barrels of oil in your sands. And you haven't figured out, you haven't counted all that oil up yet. I'll bet you that you Canadians have twice that much. I'll just bet you. But you Canadians have got enough oil up there that you can live independently by yourselves forever. You know, we'll be way past the millennium and halfway through eternity before you guys run out of that tar sand up there. Now, we Americans aren't too far behind you. We've just got more people. We've got 10 times more people than you have, and we don't have 10 times more oil. But we've got more than you. We have 3.6 trillion barrels. That's right, 3.6 trillion. Just locked up in those tar sands, and it can be produced for $30 a barrel, and we could do the same thing you're doing. And the government knows that, and the president knows that, and Standard Oil knows that, and so does everybody else. We could have been energy independent in this country years ago. And they keep telling us, oh, we've got to be energy independent. We want to be energy independent. Vote for me because I'm for energy independence. Well, then when you vote for the guy, and if you took the time to go look at his voting record, then he votes for all of those policies that make us energy dependent, not independent. So it isn't that America can't be energy independent. Oh, hell, that's in the bag. We could do that in the morning. We're not going to do it in the morning. And, in fact, we're not ever going to do it. And that's because the powers that be, the people that run the country from behind the scenes, the guys that run the oil companies and control the politics and so on, they make money by importing that $1.60 barrel of oil from Saudi Arabia. That's where the money is for them. And if you think you're going to do away with all these coal-fired power plants, you know, put that daydream to rest. The powers that be that have an 800-year supply of coal in one state, Wyoming. One state, Wyoming. 800-year supply of coal. If you think you're going to trade that for wind generators, you've got your head up the wrong end there, partner. That ain't going to happen. the powers that be aren't going to allow it. Now, it might be a great idea to do away with coal and go to wind power. I don't know. I'm not here as an advocate one way or another. I'm just here to tell you, give you some numbers, and encourage you to think for yourself for a change that you're being lied to. A lot of people are lying to. And a lot of them probably believe the lies that they're telling you. But, you know, with a little calculator here, I just have what I bought here years ago. It's a Sharp EL-1197G3 put out by Texas Instruments Company. God, it's been here on my desk. I'll tell you how old it is. It is so old that underneath it, there's a sponge rubber pad that's very tiny or thin at one end and thick at the other. And it's disintegrating in front of me right now as I speak. I'm just reaching over here and just touching it, and the foam rubber is just disintegrating off of it. And there's little pieces of it all over my desk. It's been here for 26 years. I had this thing here when I moved here in 1984. And that little, in fact, the calculator works like a shot, but the numbers don't work. You know that tape? See, the ink pad dried out years ago. I haven't had a tape on this thing for years. I still sit here using it. It's all you need. Listen to this. We have 3.6 trillion barrels of oil in those oil shale beds out in the West. We use 6 billion barrels of oil a year here in the United States. Here in this country, we use 6 billion barrels, about 20% of the world's supply, and the world's using about 30 billion barrels a year. All right, now 3.6 is 3,600 billion. So that's 3,600 billion divided by 6. That's a 600-year supply. Boys and girls, we Americans have enough oil shale that we could employ 2 million Americans to produce it at $30 a barrel, make good money. The oil companies would make the same profit that they're making in Canada, $50 a barrel. Which ain't too shabby. I mean, you just tell me a business where you can buy the raw materials for $30 a barrel and sell it for $80. You know, that's a little better than a Keystone markup, isn't it? It ain't too shabby at all. Now, they're not going to do that. They haven't done it in the past, and they're not likely to do it in the future. And the politicians aren't going to get after them, and you know. Things are going to continue on. But I wanted you to know that when they tell you that we're faced with peak oil. Now, maybe the rest of the world is. I can't speak for you people in Gambia. You know, I'm not speaking for you people in China. I don't know what the hell you guys are going to do. But here in the United States, we got a 600-year supply. And you Canadians, I don't know how much oil you guys use. There's only 30 million of you up there. Do you use one-tenth as much as we use? One-tenth of 6 billion barrels a year, that's 6,000. And 6,000 million. If you had 6,000 million, you would use 10% of that. Let me just see if I can get 6 billion on here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times 0.10, yeah, 600 million. And then you've got 3 trillion. See, that's only about a half, about a half. And, oh my God, you know, you Canadians up there could go on for more than 1,000 years. You could go on more than the millennium. You guys will have oil after the millennium is over. Can you believe that? And they're talking to us about this peak oil thing over here. Can you see how ludicrous this is? And we Americans over here haven't got that much. We can only go through 600 years of the millennium. I don't know what we're going to do the last 400 years. But the point is that we're not faced with a shortage of it today. Now, remember this oil well blew out down here in the Gulf of Mexico last April? Well, listen to this. They told us, and I'm watching the news here, just watching the Laren News Hour, they said this thing was gushing out 5,000 barrels a day. That was the initial number. Remember that? And then pretty soon they kept going up, and they said, well, this thing's coming out of here at 5,600 pounds per square inch. That's how this oil's blowing out of the ground here. See, it's a deep well. It was a mile deep, 5,000 feet deep down to the ocean floor. Then they drilled down 18,000 feet, and they hit this oil pool down there. And the oil came out at 5,600 pounds per square inch. Now, boys and girls, let me tell you how much pressure that is. That just is mind-boggling. This blowout protector was prepared to take care of up to 11,000 pounds per square inch, but a steam locomotive using superheated steam runs at 1,600 pounds. That's the kind of pressure you get up at Prudhoe Bay or over in Saudi Arabia or Iraq when you drill a new oil well. About like a steam locomotive burning super steam at 1,600 pounds per square inch. The oil coming out of there onto the ocean floor last April from this the Horizon oil rig was 5,600 pounds. Then pretty soon they upgraded that and they said, well, based upon that, we got about 50,000 barrels a day coming out. And then they upped that to 80,000 barrels a day were coming out of that well. How long do those wells last? And the answer is 30 years. 30 years. That well over there is going to pump 80,000 barrels a day. So I said, well, cut it down to 50,000. You know, 50,000 barrels a day. How much oil is 50,000 barrels a day for 30 years? Has anybody got an idea? All right. Well, at $80 a barrel, 50,000 barrels a day is $4 million a day. That's $1.5 billion a year. Times 30 years is $45 billion. Now, how much did that oil company promise to pay all you guys for all the damages they caused? $20 billion. And let me tell you, that's going to be a cold day in hell when you people collect your $20 billion. That ain't never going to happen, and you know as well as I do. But assuming that, for the sake of our discussion here, assuming that the oil company actually paid you the full $20 billion for all the damages that they caused, and I'm not sure they even caused $20 billion in damage, but, you know, they said, well, maybe we caused that much damage, and the government jumped on them and said, hey, distribute $20 billion bucks. That's less than half of the production that would come out of that one oil well, out of that pool. Now, how big is that pool? They figured that pool would support around 400 oil wells, like that one. 400 out of that pool. Do you know how much oil that is? That's enough oil out of that one pool right there. Now, they capped it up, and they closed it down. And they said, well, we caused all this damage, and we're sorry as hell, so we just capped the well, and that's all we're going to do with that, and then we'll forget about it. And nobody ever asked, well, how much oil did they find down there? You know, the objective in drilling for oil is to find out, well, how much is down there? The objective is to get that oil to market and sell it, isn't it? Isn't that what we're doing this for? But in this case, after they spilled a bunch of it out here in the Gulf, which really was a pittance, it was pumping out 80,000 barrels a day. I think it was 2 million barrels. Isn't that about what that is? And it was for about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months, something like that. And it was a big mess, and I don't deny it. And we're sorry that happened. But let's get down here and talk about money. Do you know that if you had 400 oil wells producing 50,000 barrels a day, you could furnish all the oil in the United States of America off that one oil pool? Did you know that? For 30 years. How many of those oil pools are out there in the Gulf? Well, I don't know. One, for sure. We found that one. Now let me tell you another little story over here. Up in North Dakota, or as you guys up there say, North Dakota. North Dakota. They discovered an oil pool up there in North Dakota. They got a name for it. I don't know. We'll call it the Smith Oil Field or whatever. And it runs over into Montana. So it's out in eastern Montana and western North Dakota in 1951. Get that number down. Get your pen out there. 1951, they discovered this oil field out there. It's big. And they figured it had about 0.5 trillion barrels of oil. That's 500 billion barrels of oil. How much oil is 500 billion barrels? Well, America, the United States of America, uses 6 billion barrels a year. So if you take all the oil used in California and Florida and all the cars that are driving around in New York City, and it's 6 billion barrels a year. Now divide 6 billion into 500 billion, and that's 83.3 years. Just that one oil field up there in North Dakota, for crying out loud, would run the whole damn country for 80 years. Just the oil pool where the oil spill occurred would run the whole country for 30 years. You know, assuming they would develop it. And now they're saying, oh my God, we got to quit this deep water drilling. Well, we don't want to drill out here in this deep water. Why, look at this. They spill it all over and cause a big mess. Boys and girls, in every lifetime there's rain. A little rain has to fall. If you're going to run ships around once in a while, they're going to sink. If you're going to fly airplanes once in a while, one of them's going to crash. If you're going to drill for oil once in a while, some of it's going to spill. Wake up. Smell the coffee. Get real. And so you clean up the mess. BP never lost a dime on that oil, on that spill. That well, just that one well, all by itself, over its producing lifetime, would be worth $45 billion, and they could drill 400 wells just like it in that one pool. Now get this, the Mexicans, they've got a declining oil production. They're complaining their oil production's going down. Well, they discovered an oil pool 35 miles, just like the one that we've got here off Louisiana. They got one off of Monterrey, Mexico, 35 miles wide and 70 miles long, that they're not developing. Deep oil, just like this one here. And they're not telling us how much oil's in that one. 35 by 70 miles. Then the other day, the Brazilians found a deep water. See, this is new technology. We've never been able to go down a mile under the ocean and drill down 3 miles. That was 50 years ago. That was a pipe dream. Nobody ever thought about that. Today we can actually do that. And the deeper they go, they find more pressure and more oil. Now, they got about, let's see if I got this number down right. I think they've got 4,000 oil wells out in the Gulf of Mexico, the shallow wells in close, 4,000 that they've drilled and they've capped. They've never pumped any oil out of the Gulf. So here's another little factoid for you. When you drill one of these wells, the first thing you get off of here is the pressure. And normally the pressure is 1,600 pounds. This one here is 1,632.48. It's 3.5 times more pressure than you normally get in an oil field. So is that a 30-year well or is that a 300-year well? I don't know. But they tell us that they last for about 30 years. They never pump a barrel out of them. They just take all the oil out of them under pressure. And they can only get 20% of the oil out under pressure. Then they pump the next 20% out. So when you find oil down in the ground, And after you've exploited the pool to its utmost, you've only got 40% of the oil out, 60% still down there. I presume that of all the oil that has ever been produced in the world to this moment in time, we haven't taken one barrel more than 40% of it. The other 60% still there. So we need to figure out a way, it would seem like to me, to get, you know, 80% of the oil out of the ground instead of just 40. But why would you want to spend time, effort, and energy getting oil out of the ground when you've got oil at 5,600 pounds pressure and you got 400 of them that you could run for the next 30 years? And that's just one oil company in one pool. Well, anyway, the Brazilians found one of these big oil wells. It's off of Rio de Janeiro. And guess what? The United States of America, our government, our bankrupt government, gave the Brazilians $20 billion to develop their oil pool. And I got to sit here and say, why? Why would the United States government give the Brazilian government or Brazilian oil, I don't know what they call their oil company down there, you know, they got a name for it, but why would we want to give them $20 billion? Well, there's some kind of chicanery going on behind the scenes, but it doesn't have anything to do with peak oil, boys and girls. Nothing. Nada. Now, there's all kinds of oil out there. In fact, there's enough oil out there right now. My guesstimate is 3 trillion barrels up in Canada, 3.5 here in the United States. More than likely, you got another trillion barrels out here in the Gulf of Mexico in this one pool. Probably down in Mexico, they got another trillion or more barrels in that pool. They got one over in Saudi Arabia. They haven't tapped it yet. They found it. They figure they got a trillion barrels in that pool, but they don't want to pump on that one because they got too much oil that they've already got the infrastructure for. They want to start anymore. And that's why BP, they capped that well. They're going to shut up about that. And I'll tell you a little story here. I was up in Humboldt County, California. You know, that's where I'm born. That's where I was raised. And Francis Capini was leasing a dairy, and you know, about 200 acres, something like that. Well, anyway, the owner let out the lease to an oil company, and they came up there and they drilled a well and went down 11,000 feet. At least that's what the guys on the rig told us, 11,000 feet. I said, "What'd you find down there?" He says, "They ain't telling. We don't know." But they capped it. So if I drilled a well and it was a dud and it was dry, I would say, well, it was dry and I didn't get anything, and so I'd cap it off and that'd be the end of it. Oh, no. They still maintain that. They own that. My guess is that there's lots of those around the world. They find oil and then they don't tap it, because if you did, you'd have too much production. We don't want that. How are you going to justify oil at $10 a gallon in Great Britain if you've got this stuff running out of the ground? Now, these guys are marketing the oil, and they're not dummies. These people are very smart, very shrewd business people. And they've got a propaganda campaign on out there telling us that there isn't any oil out there. But, hell, it doesn't take a genius to just pick up National Geographic, pay attention to what they're telling you when the next time there's an oil spill, get your calculator out and do a little of the numbers and the arithmetic on here. That one oil well was worth $45 billion. If that thing would produce 50,000 barrels a day for 30 years, which is what they say they'll do, that's the average, that thing was worth $45 billion at $80 a barrel. Just that one well. And how much damage did it cost? Well, they say, well, we screwed up and we... Now, ordinarily, they don't have any damages. They don't have any costs. Now, why they were trying to save $10 or $15 or $20 million on the drilling, I don't know. They, you know, the argument is, well, they were trying to cut costs and they screwed it up and it came back to haunt them. You know, when you're talking about that kind of money, $10, $20, $50, $100 million is chump change. $100 million, boys and girls, is chump change compared to $45 billion. Now, that's the kind of money, that's the kind of return that they get. Now you can see why They wanted environmental impact statements, and they wanted to block all of us little guys. See, here in the United States, a little guy like me, I could go out here and drill an oil well anytime I wanted back in the 1930s, 1920s. Okay, well, every time I drill an oil well, that's competition for the guys that are selling oil in the marketplace. And they don't want any competition. So they went to Congress and they said, what we got to have is environmental impact statements. We got to have environmental law to protect America, to protect Americans. See that protection? So they did. Now it costs about $100 million to drill an oil well in the United States. Yeah, $100 million. You got to do these environmental impact statements and do all this. So they have made it, they have gotten it to a point where drilling for oil in the continental United States is practically impossible. They didn't do that by accident. That's done on purpose. Think about that for a minute. We don't want to drill oil wells here. We're not going to develop oil in the United States. We're going to drill oil wells and we're going to develop oil in Saudi Arabia and Iraq. We've already got, boys and girls, we got a 50-year supply in those two locations. By God, we're going to use it. The pipes are there. The refineries are there. The oil is there. But, you know, when that oil runs out, then we want to know, well, where's the next big find? Well, it's up in North Dakota. It's in the oil shale. It's in the Gulf of Mexico. There's plenty of oil out there, kids. And so, well, next time you hear somebody telling you about peak oil, the world has more than 1,000-year supply right now. 1,000 years right now. So that'll take us through the millennium, and then God will show us what we're going to do next. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here and remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now, be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that those authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Now, keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, or mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, you remember the story here after this oil well blew out back last April? And it was running for April, May, June, July. They finally got that thing capped up. And you remember all the fishermen? See, the government came in and they closed down the fishing grounds. They said, hey, you can't fish here anymore. And, of course, these guys that run the fishing boats and shrimp boats and stuff like that, you know, they can't go out and they can't make a living, and they're upset about that. And so every night on the news, you know, I was watching Brian Williams in the news every night. Oh, my God, they're interviewing these fishermen down there, and they're just ranting and raving, jumping up and down, pawing the ground, biting the bushes, and doing all them things that fishermen do, you know, when they ain't fishing. And they're getting screwed over. And we're not arguing with you that you didn't get screwed and blued and tattooed and lied to in one thing and another, but there's more to the story than that. And I didn't know the whole story either. So let me back up a few years and tell you that when I was a kid, I lived on Humboldt Bay. And my uncle, Lloyd, was a crab fisherman. And he had a crab boat up in Crescent City. And, you know, I'm not super knowledgeable about fishing and fishing boats, but, you know, just talking to my Uncle Lyle, who lived down at Westport, and he fished for a while with Lloyd out of Fort Bragg, California. They got a harbor down there. It isn't at Fort Bragg. It's 6 miles south of there. What do you call that little town down there? Mendocino City. Noyo Harbor. That's what it was. He's fishing out of Noyo Harbor, just south of Fort Bragg. So anyway, you know, in talking to my Uncle Buster and Uncle Lyle and Uncle Lloyd, you know, I heard a little bit about fishing. Sometimes they'd go out salmon fishing, but mainly they were crabbers. And there were fishing boats, I mean by the hundreds, not big boats, just, you know, the little fishing boats, 2-3 man jobbers, all over the coast, you know, of California, Washington, and Oregon. And at Humboldt Bay, when I was a kid, 10, 11, 12, 13, 15 years old, all of those canneries were operating, all those fish processing plants, you know, like Lazio's, from C Street up to F, C, D, E, F. 4 blocks, solid fish canneries. And the boats would come in there, take on ice, go out fishing, and the boats loading and unloading there all that big. Today, there's nothing there. Nothing. Not a one. Even Tom Lazio's closed up last time I was there. And I never paid much attention to that. I didn't know much about it. I was talking to my old buddy David, and he said, yeah, the fishing industry is dead. The logging industry is dead. The lumber business is dead. All of these industries, these manufacturing industries, you know, that we used to have when I was a kid, and all of the activity going on, it's all, I don't know what the hell you people do now for a living. Flip burgers, I guess, and trade organic salads back and forth. But anyway, in those days, there was a lot going on. A lot going on. And so I just never paid much attention to it. But listen to this number here. Do you know how much fish we import here in the United States from around the world? Think about this now for a minute. You know, we have Captain D's and we have the Red Lobster. And I go in there every once in a while and eat, you know, at the Red Lobster. And, you know, they're telling me about lobsters and shrimp and crabs and fish. And I usually order salmon. And so, you know, you got these restaurants, you know, around here. Well, how much of the fish that we consume here in the United States of America is imported? And how much of it do we catch here? And so they said, oh, my God, we got this humongous fishing industry. In fact, they said 20% of the fish caught in the United States of America, 20% of the fishing industry of America is located right there at New Orleans in Louisiana. I thought, wow, you know, that's a fifth. That's big. Until I saw the numbers and then I said, my God, This is worse than I thought it was. Well, here's the numbers. Get your pen out here. Let's give you something to tell your wife now over the dinner table tonight. 80% of the fish that we eat in the United States of America comes from five countries in the world. Not the United States. Five other countries. It comes from, number one, China. Number two, Vietnam. Number three, India. Number four, the Philippines. And there's one other country in there, and I forgot which one it was. Philippines, South Vietnam, India, and China produce 80% of the food that we Americans eat. Seafood. That's your shrimp and crab and whatever, you know. So all of you guys that are fishing up there in Alaska, and all of you guys up and down the Pacific and the Atlantic coasts and the Gulf of Mexico produce the other 20%. Okay. Well, now, what's 20% of 20? 20 times 0.20. Isn't that 4? Well, according to my little sharp EL1197G. Now, let's put this in perspective. BP has an accident out in the Gulf. Whether they did it on purpose and it's a black flag operation, it's a conspiracy, I don't know. But, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt, they had an accident. And it shut down the fishing industry in the Gulf of Mexico. The American fishing industry was shut down. How much fish was affected? And the answer is 4% of the total consumption in America was affected. Hell, you could let out a contract and let the Chinese fill in that 4%. That's how unimportant the Gulf of Mexico is to the fishing industry of America. It is totally irrelevant. Now, I don't know how many boats you got running up and down the Mississippi River there, but your output amounts to 4% of the national consumption. It's irrelevant. The South Vietnamese or the Vietnamese or the Indians or other countries could fill up that shortage in short order. Now, the truth is, we Americans should produce 100% of all of the food that we consume in this country, that if we want it to be safe rather than sorry. But I got to report to you, boys and girls, we Americans today now are eating 50%, that's half of all the food that you eat comes from outside our borders. 80% of your fish. 80% of your fish comes from outside our borders. But on average, it's 50% total of what you're buying in the supermarket. That's a disaster. That's a catastrophe. Now when I read Deuteronomy 28, and I read that section that talks about you're going to be left eating your own children, boys and girls, the policies that our powers that be, that our Republicans and Democrats, the policies that we've been following in this country over the last 50 or 75 years are suicidal. Absolutely suicidal. Not only are we going into national captivity, not only are we going into hyperinflation, not only are we going bankrupt, but we're going to starve to death in the process. And it's our Creator, it's our God that tells us that we're going to starve to death. He says, I'm going to bring it on you. I'm going to stick it up your hind end sideways. And then we get that right out of Deuteronomy 25 and Leviticus 26, which is why when I come on the air, I say, hey, listen, you know, these preachers over here are nice guys, and some of them probably even mean well. But they've got their heads so far up their hind ends that they'll never see daylight if they live to be 110. The rest of us over here are depending upon the crap that's coming out of government and out of the pulpit, aren't we? Aren't we listening to the preachers and the politicians? They're the ones that are telling us about the green shoots, aren't they? Aren't they the ones that are telling us about, hey, listen, we got to solve our energy crisis, and we got to solve this financial crisis. That's what they're telling us. They're telling us the right things. But then when we elect them to office, they do the exact opposite. They're not doing that accidentally. The United States of America is being led right down the rabbit trail to destruction. National suicide. I just thought I'd bring that to your attention. Yeah, you guys down there in the Gulf, you took it in the shorts, and I don't deny that. But it's your government that's sticking it to you. Now, don't forget that. It's your government. Now, the ultimate cause of this is you and me. You know, you and me, Bob, we are the proximate cause of our own injury. We got a contract with our God, and we gave him the finger and said, we ain't doing this. Now, first of all, we shouldn't be eating this crab and shrimp to start with. They're unclean, and he told us don't do that. Now, you people down there on the Gulf are smarter than God, and you're eating shrimp and crab, and you're gonna keep right on doing that. You're not going to change. Well, okay. Now, your God says you want to eat that crab. You want to eat these abominable and detestable critters over here when I told you not to do that. And you people agreed to that. See, you're the heirs and the signs forever. He said, I'm going to give you these financial benefits for practicing my law. Now, instead of doing that, you're practicing Roman Catholicism and paganism and the occult. You're practicing witchcraft. And you do all of the above, and then you expect God to bless you. Oh, wait a minute. That oil spill out there wasn't a blessing. And Hurricane Katrina wasn't a blessing. Hurricane Rita is not a blessing. National economic collapse is not a blessing, and we're getting all of the above for the violation of the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are supported by 749 statutes and judgments. So you got a basic law, Ten Commandments, 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. Subtract 10, that gives you 749. And we said we would obey all of them. And we don't obey much more than 3.5%. Now, every once in a while, I do a test here in the law school. Then I take 25 laws at random out of the Bible, and 759, they're divided into 133. I take 25 out of the 133, and my students are practicing about 3.5, about 3 laws out of 25. So if you were doing 4 out of 25, you know, divide 4, that's the 4 sixes is 24. So, you know, 6 times what? You know, we're probably practicing around 16% of the law of God. Out of the 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, let's take 759 times 0.16. Yeah, we're probably doing 121 of them, on round numbers, 120 out of 750. That's not enough to carry the day, and so we're getting kicked. You know, we're getting buttered around here, and this isn't the bad part. We have not gotten into the tough stuff in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. So write that down. Run through those two chapters. Here's what's coming. You know. Get the Vaseline out. The Vaseline out. But now, when it comes to lying deceivers, we got plenty of them. And most of them are in government and in the church. So if you could take those lying deceptions in government and the church out of the equation, you know, you and I could probably just about figure out what they're going to do next and what you and I have to do next to get square with the law. So tuck it away in your heart. Now, there's a guy named Alan Simpson. He's a senator. He used to be a senator from Wyoming. And a guy named Erskine Bowles. And those two guys are chairing the president's committee on this deficit reduction plan. About 18 guys are in on it. Well, the other day, remember, they came in and they said, well, here's what we need to do in order to balance the budget and reduce the deficit. I mean, they're not talking about paying off the national debt here. You know, they're just saying, hey, we got to get our financial house in order. This thing is so far out of kilter. Listen, the president's, he's blowing, he's putting you in debt $1 trillion a year, plus, $1 trillion a year. And you're going to do that for the next five, maybe even 10 years. Next five's in the bag, maybe the next 10. Boys and girls, that not only is unsustainable, that isn't even going to last for 5 years. I don't believe it for a minute. If it does, I'll be amazed. And if it does, I mean, that's like driving nails in your coffin. Now, to say that we've gone berserk in this country is an understatement. We have gone stark, raving mad in the United States. So for the rest of you people in the world, if you think Americans are crazy, you're right. We have gone mad here. Honest to God, we believe that we can spend ourselves to prosperity. That's how far out of touch with reality we are. Is anything going to change? I doubt it. But it's going to run its course. Now, I've told you people this before. You don't need to get excited about sodomites. Those people will all die out of and by themselves. In this country, sodomites are dying on average at age 45. The average lifespan, 75. Sodomites die at 45, 39 if they get AIDS. That problem will solve itself. Social Security, that problem will solve itself. Social Security will disappear. What we need to do is to get the hell out of Social Security and the income tax before it bankrupts us personally. The nation's already gone. You're not going to save the United States. That's a dead letter issue. But you might be able to save yourself. You might be able to save your own family from the consequences of this madness, this lunacy. Now, last week I took you through the newsletters and I said, hey, listen, we got this economic crisis over here. Here's what the newsletter writers have been telling us. Here's what God Almighty's been telling us. And don't forget Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28. Here's what he's telling you. Here's what I'm going to do. So in order for us to save ourselves, we're going to have to cut loose from these politicians and these preachers. These businesses out here, you know, these big corporations like General Motors, they're all toast, they're all history. And Europe's coming right along behind us. Have you been watching these pigs over here? You know, they call them the pigs countries. It's Portugal, they're bankrupt. Greece, they're bankrupt. Then it's Italy, Spain, and Ireland. Ireland's in the news today, and shortly it'll be Portugal next. Spain next, Italy next, and get this, I just got a report the other day, France is upside down. France is bankrupt. And believe it or not, all of those countries are more solvent than the United States of America. And to keep everybody's mind off of the United States of America, what our government has done, through the ratings agencies like Standard & Poor's, you know, they go over there and they point the finger at the Greeks and they say, oh my God, look at what the Greeks are doing over here. Their debt is 112% of their GDP. And so while everybody's mind is on Greece, it's off the United States. And so then once the Greek debt problem was solved, then they pointed the finger at Ireland and said, oh my God, look at them Irish over there. They're upside down. Boys and girls, the Irish have a better balance sheet than the United States of America. The Greeks have a better balance sheet than the United States of America. Portugal has a better balance sheet than the United States of America. It is true. They're bankrupt. No two ways about it. But the United States is even more so. And we got the reserve currency. Nobody has informed us yet that we're upside down. They're over there printing money now just fast as they can, spreading it around the world. And at the recent G20 summit, all of them came unhinged at the United States and said, hey, wait a minute, you guys are defaulting on your loans by printing this money and passing it around. Now, let's suppose, you know, for the sake of our discussion here, you owed $100,000 to 10 people. $10,000 each to 10 guys. Now, you're only making about $14,000 a year. You can't pay off this 100 grand. See, that's where America is. We owe $100 trillion, and we're making $14 trillion a year. Now, we got to service this debt. We can't service the interest on this debt, much alone pay the debt back. So, we start printing up counterfeit money. That's right. We're just printing up counterfeit money, and then we're passing it out. Or we're just writing checks, sending it off to these guys, writing up bonds, hey, I owe you. And these guys are sitting over there now saying, hey, wait a minute, we don't think we're going to get paid. And you're right, you're not going to get paid. Hey, back behind the scenes, they all know that. The people that don't know that is Joe Sixpack, taxpayer in China, and Joe Sixpack, taxpayer in France and Germany, and Joe Sixpack, taxpayer in Russia, and Joe Sixpack, taxpayer in Canada and the United States. We're the only ones around here that still think there's green shoots and that there's a hope of turning this thing around. There isn't anybody else out there that's in the know that has any hope or any illusions. But they're just working their hearts out trying to keep this thing going for as long as they can. So I showed you that in the last program last week. That's what Franklin Sanders said. You know, they're just working from day to day, day to day. If they can keep this thing undercover one more day, then they've done their job for the day. But there's coming a point in time when it's going to turn turtle, and when it does, it's going to be ugly, real ugly, real nasty ugly, like war, like World War III ugly. Now, the lying deceivers that are telling us these lies over here have an agenda, and they've done their job so far, but I'd like to point out to you that Senator Simpson and Erskine Bowles now in the mainstream press are reporting this every night now in the news. We've got to solve the problem. Nancy Pelosi said dead on arrival. Their proposals are dead on arrival. We're not going to raise the Social Security retirement age to 69. The Republicans say we're not going to raise taxes. Okay. And I'm just sitting here on the sidelines. You're going to have to raise taxes. If you're going to solve your problem, you've got to raise taxes and you've got to cut spending. No two ways about it. Are you going to do that? No. So then what's the natural result going to be? Bankruptcy. Economic suicide. That's why I'm telling you, get ready for hyperinflation. These guys, they're not going to work together. They're not going to solve the problem. Not that it's solvable. The problem's insoluble to start with. But there are some things that we could do. We could go back to gold and silver. We could, you know, just arbitrarily come up with a number like $10,000 an ounce for gold. I don't think there's any gold left in Fort Knox. I think they're lying about that. We're supposed to have 8 million ounces. I think that's what the number is, something on that order. I don't think it's there. I think it's been looted by the international bankers years ago. I think they're sitting on it. And you can rest assured that the bankers are sitting on most of the gold in the world, wherever they've got it stashed. And you and I are going to hold all the paper while this thing goes upside down. And when it does, remember, 80% of the fish that we consume in America come from 5 countries around the world, and we only produce 20% of our own? Oh, my God. And you think we're going to feed ourselves over here when they quit shipping? 99% of our shoes come from outside of our country, and you think you're going to be shod and fed? I don't know of anybody that makes clothes in the United States of America. I think all of our clothes, I think we're going to be naked, barefoot, and hungry. That's where this is headed. That's what all of these numbers tell us. That's what the bottom line to this story is all about. The lying deceivers. And then the first line of lying deceivers comes from the churches. And the second line of lying deceivers comes from the Congress and the political process. Let's wake up and smell the coffee. Hey, I'm out of time here again, boys and girls. We'll have to leave it right there and remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log, schedule, and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.